Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another office hours. Apologies, a little bit late. I lost track of time at the Yummy Yummy Cafe, and as a result, I'm late. Anyway, as people are trickling in here now, I'm actually live. I can see about 300 of you are waiting, but that number will go up now that we're actually live. I'll just remind people. Dubai Courses, that academic agency. Why don't we have the old fashioned the trivium adverb? And by the time it's finished playing, a lot of the Johnny Come Lately should have trickled in.
Now from the academic agency.
Now, one of the things that I noticed at the Yummy Yummy Cafe, I had my lunch was salmon, smoked salmon on rye, okay? And it had an awful lot of salad and gubbins around the salmon on rye. Salad, quite frankly, I could have done without. But anyway, The salad was absolutely dominated, and I mean dominated, by capers. Okay, the Yummy Mummy Cafe is very much the sort of place that loves to put capers on absolutely everything. And I was trying to think, like, where did this obsession with capers come from? And I have to blame Delia Smith. Right? Do you remember Delia Smith? I have developed a conspiracy theory that in the 80s and the 90s and, you know, into the 2000s and beyond, that Delia Smith was secretly working for Big Caper, because I remember that she put capers on absolutely everything. And the sort of, you know, target demographic of these upmarket cafes is very much the sort of people who'd buy Delia Smith cookbooks. So I think Delia Smith is single-handedly responsible for capers. Before we get into the main event today, which is about the local elections and the result, the big result for Reform UK and Nigel Farage, there's something else that you guys need to see. Here's Jordan Peterson with James Lindsay. You have to watch this just to believe it.
I want to talk about this Lucifer idea. So Lucifer is the morning star, and he's the angel of the untrammeled intellect. That's how he's portrayed in Milton, right? And he's allied in some strange way with the serpent in the Garden of Eden.
If I might just interject, if he's the morning star, what do you do in the morning after the morning star rises? You wake up.
Right.
Woke.
Right. Right.
Yeah, come on. We have to watch that again.
The serpent in the Garden of Eden.
If I might just interject, if he's the morning star, what do you do in the morning after the morning star rises? You wake up.
Right.
Woke.
Right.
Merit. Pure merit. Such merit. Merit.
Oh man, foundations of logic, ladies and gentlemen.
Up yours, woke moralists. We'll see who cancels who.
Anyway, so that happened. So the big news is that Reform UK did very well at the local elections. Now, if you're not from Britain, I have to explain what these are, okay? So in the UK, there are MPs who have constituencies, and they are and MPs then go and sit in Parliament as representatives, okay? But there are also local elections. So each of the constituencies is broken down into smaller boroughs, okay? And those boroughs, and this system goes all the way back to William the Conqueror, right, and the Normans, who split up the entire country in these little parishes and boroughs, okay? So it goes all the way back to 1066, this system. Labour, of course, are now, you know, redistricting and making the smaller boroughs and parishes. They're kind of combining them into one, right, as a defensive action. But so in addition to electing MPs, which represent the county at, or represent the constituency rather, at a national level, there is also the matter of local politics and the council, the town council, the borough council, you know, the parish council. There are these smaller units, and you elect those, you elect councillors for that little area. And I think a number of, it's not just one, I think a number of people sit on these councils, and then they discuss things and vote amongst themselves for how you're going to organize at that local level, okay? And councils actually have quite a lot of power because they are responsible, for example, for fixing the potholes, which is a huge issue in the country. They are responsible for allocating local funds, local council tax monies to various different projects. They are responsible for planning permission. So let's say, for example, Tesco's or Sainsbury's or Asda wants to come to your area and build a massive supermarket. Well, they wouldn't be able to do that unless they got permission from the council. Okay, so the council actually has quite a lot of power. Now, back in August last year, I gave the last live speech I gave was called "Tuning Out the Clown Show," and in that speech, I advocated for tuning out the slop of mainstream politics and the gurning faces of Andrew Tate and Piers Morgan and so on, and actually taking over local councils. I said, well, this is probably the best way of engaging with the system, to take over the local councils. Unfortunately, it seems that Nigel Farage was paying attention to that speech, or he also had the same idea, because he has targeted the local councils and has made absolutely enormous gains, right? I think they've won over 600 councils, and it's worth putting this into perspective. I have some stats here, which I'm going to pull up, because it's worth not getting too carried away. Now, one of the significant things about these local elections, now, as you can imagine, the local councils are absolutely dominated by Labour and by the Conservatives. Okay, they don't only dominate in national elections in terms of MPs, they dominate on the local level as well. And the councillors, the town councils, are basically like a proving ground or a feeding farm, if you want, for politics at the national level, right? Because the Tory machine and the Labour machine at the local level then feeds into the Tory machine and the Labour machine at the national level, okay? So there is a symbiotic relationship. It's like, to make a football analogy, it's the equivalent of having a robust youth club, a youth, Manchester United or Arsenal, right? These are great big clubs. They can buy big stars from all over the world. But also, occasionally, you need a Gary Neville to come through, or a David Beckham to come through, or whoever. And this comes from the youth system, right? And the local politics, in a way, is a little bit like the youth system of politics, okay? There is, it's a little bit different in America, because in America you have state level, but it's a little bit like being involved in politics at the state level in America, I suppose, although it's everything's grander over there. But, you know, you can have, let's say you make it as a Georgia senator, say, or a Georgia congressman or something, that can be a stepping stone into, you know, running for, you know, being the actual senator of Georgia, or an actual congressman of for Georgia, or governor of Georgia, or something like that. Okay, so I'm just explaining what these elections are. Now, because of the local nature of them, and because they are more minor league, right? They're not big league, they're more minor league. There's typically less media focus and attention on local elections. And the actual number of people who vote in them is astronomically smaller than the amount of people who vote in nationwide elections. Okay. I think turnout nationwide hovers around 60% plus, okay, sometimes lower, sometimes higher, but generally more than half of the population turns out in an election, okay? For local elections, typically the turnout is a lot lower. It's more like 30%. You know, it's really people who are into politics and invested specifically in local politics, okay? However, they are generally used, okay, local elections. Bad results in local elections tend to be harbingers, or I guess you'd say they are used to forecast more general trends in the country and what then may happen at a national level. Okay, so they are, what I'm saying is, we shouldn't overrate their significance, but we should say actually they are reasonably important for kind of getting the mood of the nation or something like that. Okay. And forecasters, and typically the big parties, the Tories, Labour, if there is a disastrous night in the local elections, as both the big parties had, it can have ramifications then for the leadership of those parties. Okay. So at the moment, there are big talks in the Tory party. Is this dire result, because the Tory party failed to win a single seat on the local election night? They actually got zero seats, okay? Zero councillors, we should say. Could they then use it as a springboard to get rid of Kemi Badenoch? Okay, so that's one of the big live stories. And I put a tweet out recently saying that right now, as we're speaking, there are people in Tory headquarters, okay? Some of you are watching this show, I know it, but there are people in those circles who are legitimately arguing that the problem with Kemi Badenoch is that she's too right-wing. And you think I'm joking, but I'm not, right? So there is a dream scenario where, after taking the extraordinary step of replacing Rishi Sunak with Kemi Badenoch, that they're going to go one further and be like, okay, well, now we'll put in James Cleverly, or now we'll put in somebody who's even wetter than Kemi Badenoch. It's almost too good to be true. So that's the kind of doom scenario for the Tory party, because they could be like, oh, right, well, we need to be more like the Lib Dems, right? Because Ed Davies killing it, you know? There's that scenario. But there's also the scenario that this is the pretext to get rid of Kemi and to bring in T1000 Robert Jenrick, who I believe that certain vested interests want, right? Certain vested interests, in my opinion, want Jenrick, right? He was their choice even before, and they were blocked basically by the globalists within the Tory party. Which, you know, and if you remember at the time, I was arguing for Kemi to be the choice. Anyway, I think that's enough of a preamble. I've got a few video clips and things I want to play here, but I also want to show you these stats, because while it was an extremely good night for reform, I do think that the numbers need to be putting into context, right? They need putting into context. So let me just pull up this stat I found earlier on. It was actually like a meme. Hold on a second. I can't find it. I get too many notifications. I do. Here we go. So here is my screen. And as you can see here, Reform, they win 676 seats at these local elections. But the thing is with the local elections is that they're staggered. Not all of the council seats are up for grabs. So there's Reform celebrating, you know, they're bringing out the champagne. And then you put it into context and you see that Labour still have 6,170 seats. The Tories still have 4,500 seats. The Lib Dems still have 3,000 seats. And the Greens, who are a minor party, let's not forget, only have 850 seats. Okay. So I do think that there is a tendency for people to get overexcited about this. Now, one of the main reasons that people have got so excited about this is because the BBC have this guy called, what's his name? John Custis? Is it John Custis? This pollster guy? Yeah, John Custis. You know the guy, right? This guy here. Right? And he basically has been appointed like the voice of God. I don't know when this happened, but at some point, John Custis was made like, you know, oh, he is the guy. What he says basically is like God talking, right? And what he was saying on the BBC coverage and what he's been saying all week is, look, if you dig into the numbers, this is not only a disastrous night for the Tory party, who got zero council seats, it was a disastrous result for Labour. And according to Custis, this is a watershed moment in British politics because it shows that, okay, reform and not just a blip, that there's a genuine desire in the country to rip apart the two-party system, to reject the establishment, and to go with an insurgent like Farage, and then it's primarily driven by immigration, okay? And Custis has said this, so the BBC have massively run with this narrative, okay? Now, I will say that I have had a sneaking suspicion for some time that the regime want Farage, if you want to put it that way. And if you have a think about how they react to this, right, insurgency from reform versus, for example, how they react to the AfD in Germany, you can see quite a big difference, right? The AfD in Germany, they have been designated an extremist party. They're called far right. They are not normalized. They are kept out. They are, you know, it's the second coming of Hitler and all the rest of it. Whereas when it comes to Farage and reform, you get this massive trumpet. I mean, basically the BBC might as well have got out the trumpets and the bugles and they'd be like, reform are going to take over, guys. It's coming. And actually, like, we're cool with it, right? There is a distinction. You notice that the BBC are not freaking out. They're actually perfectly comfortable with this, okay? Let's not forget a second, okay? Let's not forget, before I play these clips, some of the shenanigans with reform. Remember, I made this. Where is it? Remember, it came out that reform were keeping files on various individuals who were, you know, they were literally spying on the membership of the party, feeding information back to intelligence and the authorities and so on, in the name of, you know, counter-extremism and all the rest of it. Let's just remind ourselves.
He said, I have a file on them. I have a file on everyone. This was before the party had even been set up. And I said, oh, so do you have a file on me?
So that's just a little reminder of what they've done in the past. And you see, this is the trouble, really, because people are caught between excitement for the zero seats dream and just for something different happening. And the fact that it's pretty obvious, like Farage has made it no secret about what he is. OK, there are two aspects of this story I want to focus on. Before I get to the super chats and the super thanks, etc., the first aspect is the question of Kemi Badenoch herself. Okay, Kemi Badenoch is an absolute disaster. Okay, I thought she was going to be shocking, which is why I clandestinely supported her and made various videos, tongue in cheek as they were, supporting Badenoch, because I believe that this was the ticket to truly do the double tap on T-1000, right? Do you remember? You need to, it's not just enough to blast T-1000 apart. You got to double tap it with the shotgun straight between the eyes into the lava so it can never come out again, okay? And Badenoch was my version of, I wanted Badenoch because I believe that Badenoch would do this. I'm not kidding you. Kemi Badenoch, in these local elections, ran the worst campaign I have ever seen. Given that I have lived through Kamala Harris, Rishi Sunak, okay, and various other, or Theresa May, right? Given that I've lived through all of these terrible, terrible campaigns in my lifetime, it is saying something that Badenoch ran the worst campaign I have ever seen. If you don't believe me, let's just take a little, I'm going to mute myself. We're going to watch this together, okay? See if you can even get through it without averting your eyes.
Today is Thursday, the 1st of May. It is polling day. I am out getting out the vote with our Conservative candidates. All over the country, you will have fantastic Conservative candidates to vote for. It is only with Conservatives that you get better services and lower taxes. Polling closes at 10 p.m. Don't forget to get out and vote for your local Conservative candidates today. Vote Conservative.
I mean, dear God, I just want to go through. Let us count all of the ways that this is one of the worst things anybody's ever put out, okay? Number one. Right? She is the leader of the Conservative Party of Great Britain, the most successful political party in political history, okay? In history. She is wearing a pair of bloody jeans and a kind of Primark, you know, two-bit Primark bloody fleece. What the fuck is that? She didn't even bother to wear a dress. Like, she is literally wearing. I mean, she looks like somebody who's just walked in off the street. She looks like someone who's going shopping at Sainsbury's or something. Okay, not the leader of the Conservatives. Right, there's problem number one. Problem number two, who's this fella on the left? Terrible optics. right? You've already got Kemi as the leader, okay? Now you've got this guy on the left, and now you've got this woman on the right. And let's keep on playing it.
Today is Thursday, the 1st of May.
Who's this little fella here? Who's that little fella there? Who's that girl there? And the problem we've got now, right, is that if you have a look at the frame, I'm pointing this out for the idiots in Tory HQ who watch this show, okay? If Morgan McSweeney, who works for Labour with Lord Mandelson and Blair himself in his ear, right, would never have allowed this to go out, okay? If you have a look at all of the Keir Starmer's messaging, Keir Starmer is always surrounded by, you know, like your local county cricket team, okay? Almost everybody in the Labour videos is, you know, kind of white English, okay? Now, in this case, the problem you've got is that Kemi, okay, is already activating the lizard brain because she's Nigerian, right? And it doesn't help that she's got a really, really quite thick Nigerian accent. Let's listen to it again.
I am out getting out the vote.
Right.
With our...
No, like that is identifiably not a local accent, okay? That is an accent of somebody who's gone to maybe good schools, but it's not a local accent, okay? So you've already got the problem that Kemi herself is reminding people, oh, hold on a second, she's, to quote Laurence Olivier in Sleuth, she's not one of me, right? A lot of people are already thinking that. So in the framing, you need to overcome that by surrounding her with locals, right? With local people, if you get my drift. But instead, what they've done is they filled the frame with people who a large section of the Tory base are going to think, hold on a second, these are all new arrived. What's happening to our country? What's happening to our country? This doesn't look like Johnny. His name's probably Sanjeet or something. So already you're driving a message to say, we are the party who are pro-immigration. We have an immigrant as our leader, an actual immigrant to this country. And now on top of it, we're going to fill the frame with other new arrivals, right? So we are the party that brought in 6 million extra people in 5 years. And now we're just going to like double, triple and quadruple down on it. She doesn't have to say anything else, right? For that to be the takeaway message. It is an absolute disaster of PR, of messaging, of understanding what the country is looking for, the mood of their base. It is just a disaster, right? It's a disaster. And anybody who worked on this campaign and who anybody responsible for this bit of video that we're watching here needs to be fired immediately, okay? They need to be fired immediately. You need to get Malcolm Tucker chewing out and cussing out anybody who is responsible for this. I can only imagine the language used, okay? It's a disaster. Blair, if you're watching me, like, well, Blair works for the other side. But I don't know, David Cameron, Gideon, any of you clowns. Boris, how the fuck did you allow this to go out? Anyway, so if you ask me, Kemi Badenoch is history. There's no way to come back from what we've just witnessed, okay? That video there is one of the most shocking things I've ever seen. It's so bad. The second thing I want to look at is Farage himself. Now, here's the thing. I've been talking about containment for many years, and it's obvious to everybody that reform are containment. The trouble is, now it's got momentum. Now it's being presented as an insurgency. Farage is going to use this result as leverage that he is vindicated for taking his kind of containment stances. He's basically saying, it openly into your face, this is a victory for containment, and you people who actually want solutions to these problems, you're out, because the state has won. The system has won again, right? bear that in mind and listen to Farage talk. I'm going to play two clips here and tell me if I'm wrong.
General election, I set my sights on May the 1st. I knew there were going to be mayoral elections and county elections right across England. And I thought if we could professionalise the party, build the party, get branches, get candidates, raise some money, that we could put on a good show. And we've transformed the party in that period of time. Over 400 branches have been created. Thousands of people have come through for vetting to be candidates. The one disappointment was that nine of the counties, including Essex, Suffolk, Norfolk, Sussex, Isle of Wight, Hampshire, elections were simply cancelled in what would have been potentially some of our strongest counties in the country, under the guise of, oh, well, we're going to be changing local government. But actually, it was collusion between the Conservative and Labour parties. Nonetheless, we still carried on with 23 sets of local elections and six mayoral elections. Of course, what I hadn't bargained for was a by-election in Runcorn and Helsby, one of Labour's safest seats in the country. Now, our candidate, Sarah Poachin, distinguished career in business, 20 years as a magistrate. She's been a local politician, a mayor of East Cheshire, and an all-round magnificent candidate. And she won the by-election. Now, you might say to me, it's only by six votes, but remember, Labour had a majority of 15,000 just 10 months ago. So that started off being a really, really good night. And then as Friday progressed, we saw, frankly, a landslide towards reform. Most votes, most seats, we won two mayorships, and we've won 677 county council seats from a standing start. We obliterated the Labour Party in County Durham, and we obliterated the Conservative Party in Kent. It is the most stunning set of local election results ever seen. John Curtis, the professor that the BBC used for analysis.
There you go, John Curtis. See what I mentioned, this guy? Basically, John Curtis saying this is like the media kind of political landscape. It's like God saying it. They say God has decreed reform are going to win in 2029.
Curtis has extrapolated those results and said, if repeated across the country, we would win the next general election. So the response we're going to get from Labour and Conservatives will no doubt be months of continued abuse, but we are in control of 10 of those county councils, and we're the biggest party in four others. And our job now is to cut out waste. Our job now is to say to central government, I'm sorry, we don't want young male migrants who cross the channel being pushed.
Now that's a plus. That is a plus. If reform keep to that, that is one good thing that can come out of this. Let's not beat around the bush. If reform can keep those asylum seekers and whatnot being bussed in, basically, to different areas of this country, that is one good thing that can come out of this. Don't get me wrong.
Into our areas. We're going to have some of the most enormous fights. I know that. But believe me, we're going to stick to everything that we promised the voters on May the 1st. This is a transformative moment in British politics. The Conservative Party has now been hollowed out.
Do you believe that this is truly a transformative moment in British politics, ladies and gentlemen? Okay, press one if you believe that this is a transformative moment, and press two if you think same old shit, same old shit, same old shit. You let me know. One or two.
In its traditional shires, Labour is in very, very deep trouble in the Midlands and the North, and reform have a massive opportunity to build from here. And I would say to you, any member of the public that supports what we're trying to do, that thinks politics in Britain needs to change, and that the only agents for change are Reform UK, come and help us.
Think about that. The only agents of change are Reform UK. That is Nigel Farage sticking his sticking the line in the sand and telling all of those other parties, right, whether it's Heritage or Homeland or any other insurgent, populist or right-wing parties.
Drainage. Drainage, Eli.
Because it's safely contained with Nige. I am the change agent. Me and me alone. You're an extremist. You can't be trusted. You over there, you're a racist. Me, I'm a safe pair of hands. I am the one who will be the change agent, because I am the one who's been entrusted by His Majesty himself to do this job.
Come and join us. Join our people's army. We're 230,000 strong. The bigger we get, the more solid we become, the more chance we've got of winning the next general election and turning this country around. And you know something? If we go on relying on the Labour Party or the Conservative Party, nothing is going to change, and our deterioration economically and socially will continue. This actually could be the last chance to save our country and turn it around. So please join us, help us.
So there was Nige. I actually thought he was kind of lacking in energy personally, but there was another one. This clip was doing the rounds. Let's have a look what he said.
All of the furore around Rupert Loeb, people were saying, this is it, this is going to be, this isn't just a dent in the Reform Party, this is going to destroy the Reform Party. And over the weekend, people were saying, Rupert who?
Yeah.
It doesn't appear to have made any sort of impact, despite...
Rupert who? Now, I did say, I remember at the time, I did say Farage has got a huge amount of capital, and Rupert Loeb, basically people don't know who he... don't know who he is. So I actually saw this coming back when it happened, and I said so on this show. I said this is going to go Farage's way. Okay, trouble is, because of that rift, because of that beef, Farage is going to use every single success and opportunity to rub it in further, to lay the blade further, to consolidate his power and to gatekeep out, because his argument is going to be exactly the same argument as Blair, by the way. Look, we've won. We've got results. We've got success. You guys are losers. You guys are losers. You guys are losers. Okay? It's going to be his argument going forward.
The best efforts of Andrew Pearce with his journalistic expertise.
Even though I work here, I'm going to be critical of GB News. GB News covered this story obsessively, as if it was some huge story.
It's all his fault.
And it was never a huge story. It was one person... Who had increasingly been heading in a different direction.
And your mate, your chairman, made it a big story by calling in the police.
Well, he did do that.
Do you think that was a good idea? I'm going to challenge you.
I'll pass on that.
There we are.
I'll pass on that.
It was a bizarre decision for Zia Yusuf to call
anyway,
in the police.
But, you know, it was only ever going to be one person. And the upshot of this, what it really tells you is that X is not the real world.
Yeah. Correct. You know, Twitter, as it was.
Twitter, as it was, is not the real world. So, yeah, you know... Do you know, when you get problems in life, the best thing is to confront them.
Would you have him back now in the party, Rupert Loeb, after all of this? Ben Habib, is there a way back for Ben?
Over my dead body.
Well, he wrote a piece saying you didn't deserve your victory. Did you see it?
I mean, I'm sorry, you get these small, very insignificant people who...
Say what you think, Nigel.
Who think they're more important than they are.
Look at this. This is not... when I say rubbing your face in it, He is. This is what you call in pro wrestling, right? It's when the heel is not just digging in, he's rubbing your face in the mat. He is choking you out on the bottom rope. He's putting his boot on your throat and saying, you take that, Rupert Loeb and Habib and you the online clowns and the right wing or whatever. All of you, you're nothing. It's all about me. Right? He might have, I mean, this is like a Rick Rude promo or something.
They're frankly nothings. There you are.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I don't mind people sounding off. I don't mind people disagreeing with you. I never have done. As long as there's some fundamental underlying loyalty. And that's the one thing I demand.
Yeah. You just kept the ship steady, it seemed, as an observer, when all the headlines were about Rupert Loeb and Ben Habib and whether this was a split in the political right. You just kept your hand on the tiller, it seemed, but you just carried on in that direction towards those local...
Look at this female commentator who is literally fluffing him as well. She's literally like, you know, she's literally fluffing him live on air. It's an embarrassment that this went out.
Council elections where you've swept the board by any definition and that by-election. Were you confident, Nigel, all the time throughout that process that it was going to go that way?
Of course. Well, I was confident that Rupert Loeb and the alt-right Tommy Robinson supporters on X, you know, weren't much of a benefit to us. I was confident about that. I was confident it was the right thing to do.
See, the thing is, this is the problem. The quote-unquote alt-right Tommy Robinson supporters on X are to help. That is absolutely true. The trouble is, he's going to try to use that brush to tar all of you as well, to tar everybody online, basically. That's what this is the dishonest bait and switch that happens, right? Everybody knows I'm not a Tommy Robinson supporter, for example, but I'm sure that him and the people who work for him would tar me with the same brush, and they tar you with the same brush too. Why? Because ultimately it's about control. It's about safety and control over people that they know that they have control over. That was the issue ultimately with Rupert Lowe, right? Rupert Lowe was too independent, and Nige doesn't like that. He's never liked an independent voice, because it all has to be about him.
You know, I knew it with dentists in the short term, but no more than dentists. But, you know, I mean, look at the image of the party now.
So there it is. He is, you know, Toad of Toad Hall is puffed up with his victories. Absolutely puffed up with his victories, he is. And, you know, he's won. He won the 600 odds council seat. So at the moment, it's going to be very difficult to assail him. I also get the impression that the media, by the media, I mean everybody from the BBC all the way to The Guardian and all the way to The Telegraph, basically want this to happen. I think they have come to peace with the idea of reform, right, becoming the main challenge to Labour. But I also maintain that it is only a matter of time before, once they get rid of Kemi Badenoch, the Tories, and get somebody like Gendrick in, or somebody else who's identifiably, you know, more right-leaning, quote-unquote, that eventually the T-1000 antibodies will kick in, and the Tories will think, we could get back into power here. Okay, we're facing an existential wipeout. We may not exist as a party this time in 10 years' time if we carry on like this. Or we can just make a pact. We can join Farage. We can unite forces as the ultimate, newly improved, reformed Conservatives, reformed T-1000, containment ultimate version. It's going to happen. Why is it going to happen? Because it's a mathematical certainty that it has to happen. Right? And this is, I am convinced, Farage's role. Okay? Farage, if he, right, both, there have been stirrings that Gendrick is on manoeuvres in the background, that he's been pulling out the feelers, that they're talking about how can we create a merger between Reform and the Tories? How can we make this happen? The Tories ultimately will do this rather than go extinct. They will do it. And ultimately, Farage's ego, if they allow him to be the leader, if they allow him to be the man who says, I am the man who reformed the Conservatives and made them conservative again. And lo and behold, in 2029, we'll be back to square one. We'll be back to square one. Only in 2029, we'll be another 5 years on. And let's pretend Farage becomes the prime minister and there's another 5 years on. And all of the time, the demographic clock is ticking, right? All of the time, time is running out. That's basically what the establishment can do, because all they have to do is wait the clock out. They can wait the clock out. You picture it like a football team, right? Or a football match. The establishment, the regime is 4-0 up, right? But there's a bit of complacency creeping in, right? What was the game? AC Milan versus Liverpool. Do you remember the 4-3 thriller? Do you remember that cup final? Milan were 3-0 up. They were cruising. Kaká, you know, doing up his laces. Cafu having a fag at the back. They'd already got the champagne out. And lo and behold, Liverpool out of nowhere pulled out one of the greatest comebacks of all time. Okay. And this is basically where the country is. The country is waking up. The regime has been getting complacent. You know, they think they're there. The country's waking up. The Liverpool comeback is starting. So what can they do to put the game to bed? Okay. Now, if Milan back in that game hadn't have lost their concentration and then have just been tight for the last 6 minutes of that game, you know, passed it round the back, you know, Maldini now, over to Nesta, etc. Just passing it round the back and all of that, rather than what actually happened, they would have won the game, right? And this is ultimately what Nigel can do for El Reginio, okay? Because he can make it feel like Liverpool are coming back, but actually what the system is really doing is passing it round the back and running down the clock. Is that too black-pilled? Is that too much of a doomsday scenario? I don't know. But it's a possibility that you have to look out for. So all we can do, really, given that we are disenfranchised by the system, given that the system refuses to give the real men and women of this country a real voice that isn't control opposition, all you can do is continually to flank reform and to point out when they're not doing enough, when they're not saying enough, when they're being too wet, exactly the same as we've done to the Tories all these years too. Okay. And basically emphasizing over and over again, reform, if you're just going to be Tories 2.0, what's the point of you? What's the point of you, basically? So, you know, in theory, there should be a way to hold reform's feet to the fire. In practice, let's see, because I really do believe that this is the mother of all containment operations. And I'm extremely skeptical about the radical potential of Farage to actually change anything in this country. Okay. That is my assessment. It's probably not a surprise to many of you, but as I said in my little bit driving here, you know, people like to, people choose the commentators who, you know, reflect what they're privately thinking out loud. So there we are. Now, one more slightly more rosy scenario that I could put out for you is that Labour under Keir Starmer and possibly later under Angela Rayner or, you know, whoever else Tony decides to put in, because of the threat of reform and because of these actual results now, they do the whole strafe right thing even more, right? They strafe right even more than they have done. There was already an article that was put out earlier this week saying that Starmer and Rayner are absolutely terrified of doing anything that could be perceived as woke, okay? And that, in my opinion, that is basically like two double-digit IQ people trying to process the orders of the Dark Lord, right? It's obvious that Blair has said, listen, all of you, stop doing woke left-wing things immediately, okay? I will not have insubordination. Anybody caught doing anything woke gets zapped by the lightning, okay? He's clearly given that order. Trouble is, Starmer is thick as pig shit, as is Rayner, as are most of the modern-day Tory party, Labour Party. Freudian slip there, as are most of the Labour Party. So whether they're able to actually do this in an intelligent way remains to be seen. I think they're just getting a firmware update and they're doing it and they'll do it in the clunkiest way imaginable, right? But there is a scenario in which they actually make life more difficult, right? For, you know, they actually reduce some of the legal and illegal immigration so that when the time comes, when they are zero seated, come 2029, and you get Prime Minister Farage, leader of the reformed Conservatives, that they have actually done some of the hard work already. And so Farage will be allowed to be even more radical in the direction that we want by the time you get to 2029. That's a possibility, okay? I mean, Is it more likely than the more doomsday scenario that I outlined? I mean, you know, I'm just putting it out there so I'm not accused of being a doomsmonger. There is a possibility that there's a rosier future ahead, but let us see. All right, so let me hit the super thanks and the super chats, and then we will get out of here. Let me know your thoughts. I mean, are you excited about this? I was excited. I even shed a little tear when I saw that the Tories actually got zero council seats. You know, that was a dream, a dream come true. Port Film Co-op says, Carl Benjamin said recently, because he was a liberal until only recently, he's never watched a speech by Jonathan Bowden. Now that he's rejecting liberalism, what thinkers would you recommend to Carl? Well, Carl has already read Evola. I would recommend that he reads Thomas Carlyle. I think Carl would get a real kick out of the essay Modern Prisons, right, by Carlyle. I think he'd enjoy that. Carl Schmitt, always good. You know, that would be a good start. I mean, Carl has already read Evola. I'm surprised that he's never watched any Bowden. He should. Studio Raider says, do you work for the Mujahideen? No, I do not work for the Mujahideen, Studio Raider. What a ridiculous question that is. Also, there are lots and lots of Mujahideens, but, you know, there's that horrible one, the MEK or whatever it's called, who are basically like a kind of Marxist organization funded by the Americans, who are basically like a kind of death cult against the Iranian regime. They're a horrible group, absolutely horrible group. So I would have nothing to do with them or any other Mujahideen, you know, not being a Muslim, Studio Reina, you know, stupid question. The Vo says, buy yourself some Uncle Ben's microwave rice on me. Oh, God. I was trying to watch a video earlier on, and this disgusting advert came on, and I was unable to skip it. Like, it made me watch the whole advert. Let me just show you the face of this woman. I couldn't actually find the advert to play it, right? But let me just show you this woman here. This is one of the most disgusting adverts I've ever seen, okay? Because in it, this woman makes some spaghetti in the microwave. She doesn't boil it like a normal human being would. She makes a pack of spaghetti in the microwave, then proceeds to get a bottle of tomato ketchup, squirts the tomato ketchup into the spaghetti, right? And then she mixes it up. And then she kind of does this little, she kind of eats some of the tomato ketchup spaghetti and does this kind of little face. It is revolting. Okay. And to top it all off, she's fatter than Lizzo, this woman as well. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. I looked to see if I could complain to Uncle Ben's, right? They're called Ben's Originals now. And I went to look to see if I could complain at them directly on Twitter, only to find that they have deleted their Twitter account. In shame, no doubt. Right? So Uncle Ben's as a company is no longer on X. They've just flatly deleted their account. So unfortunately, I was not able to publicly complain at them. Let us have a look. Okay, sorry, I started doing the super chats. I need to do the super thanks first. Studio Rayner says, the internet initially released for financial services poses a bigger risk to... I think I read that last week, didn't I? I read that last week, I feel. I feel like I did that last week too. Kevin Crow says, I feel like I did that one as well. Am I going mad here? I feel like I did that one too. Okay, let's go from there. Let's go from here. There was a super chat on a very old video of mine called Elite Theory, Giantano Mosca and Vilfredo Pareto. Okay, that's a long time ago. He says, you contradict this theory by attempting to show that Orwell is wrong, says Ken Nahara. Equality, economics, power, democracy, elites, quality of life and progress all share the trait of relying on perspective rather than nuanced analysis. You could argue the exact inverse, and depending on your perspective, it would be true. The desire to validate one's perspective to others is the pinnacle of progress. I'm not sure if I agree with that, Ken Nahara. What I was saying was that these things, specifically equality, which is what Orwell was arguing for, and democracy, are basically impossible. Elite theory renders both of those things impossible. Because if the organized minority always rules over the disorganized mass, democracy is therefore de facto impossible, isn't it? Secondly, if you have the organized minority as against the disorganized mass, you've already created two classes, right? The ruling class and the ruled, hence unequal. So these two things, right, even if you go from that very basic definition, are not possible. And this is what Orwell, in that essay, Second Thoughts on James Burnham, could not accept. Because for all of the good things that Orwell did, he never abandoned his social democrat ways. Pareto's 80% slugger says, hi, AA, talking about going back to basics, Carlyle and Avila videos, could you please reconsider consider recording your old Louis Althusser lectures? The trouble is I can't find that lecture. I did have a look. I can't find my Althusser lecture. Otherwise, I would do it. I could always recreate it from memory, of course, because I gave it so many times. Alphonse Rides Again says, an elephant in the room in discussing the pre-war urban underclass who were moved into these high-rise tower blocks. This was on last week's Deepest Law with Morgoth and Simon Roberts and Horace on the horrible high-rise flats that were built in the 60s. He says, an elephant in the room in discussing the pre-war urban underclass who were moved into these high-rise tower blocks is how many of them were fully or partly Irish in origin. The urban white working class was arguably not ethnically homogenous from the mid-Victorian era onwards. Either the rot set in earlier than people make out, or anti-Celtic prejudice underpin some of this, depending on your perspective. Certainly, I mean, speaking of Carlyle, he was certainly onto the fact that, he was writing at a time when there was large Irish immigration into certain areas, like Glasgow, like Liverpool, as two examples. And, I've talked before about how those places have had persistent social problems, and those places have had persistent leans towards socialism or even communism, right? Who knows? There could be, you could say, well, given that they're largely Irish populations, maybe those are issues that come with Irish populations. You'd have to fully look into that. But I do know, for example, that when the Irish moved over to America, they also brought with them similar kind of political machinations, socialism. They were highly involved with the unions, the trade unions always. The Catholic Church is also, remember, elite theory, right? Churches are a place to congregate and to scheme and to conspire and to plan politically, right? To organize politically. And that is one of the reasons why the Irish, quote unquote, bring these issues, especially when they move to Protestant nations, because they're meeting on their own little in their own little communities. So therefore, they are able to dominate politically wherever they get a foothold. So that is definitely something that is true of them as a group. Whether they always come prepackaged with socialism or even communism, that is something I don't fully understand. But maybe there's a kind of Irish Catholic type of socialism that I'm not aware of. But it does seem like they come with all of those things as well. Okay. Now, I will say that the flip side of that is that because the Irish are organized, because the Irish are Catholic, they tend also to be socially conservative. You know, yes, they may have some socialist leanings, but they tend often to be socially conservative too, which means historically they have been, as E. Michael Jones will tell you, for example, they can be a bulwark against subversion sometimes as well, because they've got an eye on other organized groups, right? You know, some of those other groups. So there's different ways of looking at that issue. I'll note, for example, that Henry Ford, who we've been talking about recently, vis-a-vis jazz, I mean, he was from an Irish background, for example. And, you know, you could say, well, okay, he brought some issues with him. He brought problems with him. You may think he had some controversial views, but his basic attitude of giving back and building hospitals and so on was pretty good, right? For the area that he was influential in, Detroit, he built a lot of that town. And he did it through a kind of old-fashioned sense of noblesse oblige that probably came from his Catholic roots. So, you know, different ways of looking at the same issue. Alphonse writes again on the last week's office hours when we talked about the blackout in Spain and Portugal, says the Tory government wanted to connect the UK energy grid to the Moroccan energy providers via undersea cables. Can you even imagine? Yeah, imagine being dependent on Morocco for your energy needs. It's ridiculous. Tim Cornish says, this is on Black Horse's video, Mark Carney's Electoral Miracle Sparks a New Era in Canada. He says, looks like the US move to self-reliance is forcing Canada to become self-reliant. Ha! Huh. Imagine becoming sovereign again. Double ha! Huh. Yeah, well, thank you very much, Tim Cornish. Very interesting situation. Eyes That Watch on an old Deepest Law called The Psychology of Self-Help that was reviewing Curtis number 21 says, interestingly, JBP, that's Jordan Peterson, is trying to use this to reverse the atomization. Yeah, very interesting. Studio Rayner on how Julius Evola can help you face modernity says, I'd argue that Machiavelli provides the best skills and lessons to succeed in the modern world. His lessons are meant for those who are in governance, but since our government has turned into a reality TV show, Evola is much more of an idealist than a pragmatist. The first step is learning how to use rhetoric properly. It's probably worth the same as a PhD in economics. Right now, rhetoric is succeeding in convincing investors to put the money of millions of pensions into humanoid robots and AI. Well, Evola does not teach you to, quote unquote, succeed in the modern world, right? In terms of material success, in terms of climbing the greasy pole, in terms of rising up to the top of an organization. Yes, of course, Machiavelli would be a better teacher if those are your goals. What Evola does is he teaches you to see the world in a different way and to transcend the material, the, you know, mere materialism to a higher purpose, right? And he can get you started on that journey. Although at some point in your journey, if you're interested in such a journey at all, that is, you may not be. But if you are, you have to choose a path, ultimately. And there are many, many different paths available. I'm less convinced that Evola will be able to help you choose a path, but he can at least set you at the bottom of the mountain where you've got all the paths in front of you. And then ultimately you have to pick one. Ken Nahara on the truth about immigration. This is another very old video. Ken Hara clearly going back through the back catalogue and sending super thanks. He says, look throughout history for an example of massive immigration that wasn't ambiguous with conquest. If we use the word economists, then the Mongols were nomadic immigrants. If we use the views of the economists, then the Mongols were nomadic immigrants who traveled around the world, which was a net economic benefit. Would making this claim at the London School of Economics be incorrect? Well, it may not surprise you, Ken Nahara, but there is a significant body of what you might call revisionist Mongol scholarship, right? I've got a few books here which are argued from this sort of perspective that literally make the argument that Genghis Khan and the Mongols were kind of like, late medieval Tony Blairs, right? There's literally an article somewhere arguing that Genghis Khan was like a forerunner of Tony Blair, with his moderately laissez-faire managed economy. You think I'm making this up, but I'm not. Let me show you. I'll pull up that article. I think it was Max who first showed me this. Hold on. Tony Blair, Genghis Khan. Wait a minute. See if I can find this article on Tony Blair and Genghis Khan. Tony Genghis Khan was a centrist or something. It was kind of I can't find it now. I'll have to ask Max Tempers to pull this up because I can't find it, but it's a hilarious argument. Okay, I can't find it. Yeah. Yeah, I can't find it, sorry. Cephalopodo says, hi AA, I just saw your recent Twitter about jazz. If I like jazz, does that mean I'm a master tiger rider, or should I live in ritual shame for betraying Europa? Haha, just kidding, keep up the good content. Well, if you're interested in that, tomorrow's video is all about jazz, and it's all about this story that I've been talking about, where jazz was pushed from the top down, okay? And I will take you through all of the necessary steps that were made by the people who wanted to make jazz the national music of America in the early and mid-20th century. Quite a story. Alfred the Greatest says, and this is on the video from earlier today, 33 life-changing happiness hacks every person needs. He says, hi, AA. My friend is getting married and wants to smoke cigars on his stag. He has never smoked, and nor have I. We are Zoomers, so it's a LARP. Are there any cigar brands you'd recommend in this context? Appreciate this is like asking Bob Dylan to sing Happy Birthday, but he got the idea watching you. Thanks. An absolutely ideal cigar to smoke in a wedding context would be, now bear in mind, one of the things you've got to bear in mind, a big cigar can take over an hour to smoke, right? So you've got to think, like, are you going to be able to take an hour or 2 hours out of a wedding? Given that a wedding is only a short amount of time, you may not want to spend all night smoking one cigar. So I would say the absolute safest bet is to get a brand called H. Upman, and the cigar is called Half Corona, okay? They're much smaller cigars, okay? But they only take 20 or 30 minutes to smoke, okay? And then if you get a few of them, you could break it up. You could have one, and then maybe later on you could have another one, or maybe later on you could have a third one, but you're not going to be antisocial, you know, taking 2 hours to smoke like a massive Churchill or something like that, okay? So that's my recommendation, an H. Upman Half Corona. Also, since your Zoomer's LARPing, remember, you don't inhale a cigar, so don't take the smoke down into your lungs, because you'll spend all night coughing and you'll possibly be sick. And you don't want your mate being sick with cigar sickness on his wedding day. Okay? So those three things. Also, make sure you do it outside because they smell as well. So all of those things. if you want a bigger cigar, Upman is still a good brand to go with. You can have a slightly larger one. I would recommend a Corona Major. Corona Major. They come in those tubes, okay? And they might be a good bet for you guys because you're not going to have decent storage, are you? Right? Whereas those tubes, they keep them quite nice, right? So if you don't have your own humidor, you get, because you need to keep them at 65 degrees humidity, okay? What you can do is you can get these little Bovida packs, they call them, B-O-V-E-D-A, Bovida. You get a little Tupperware. Ideally, you get one which has got a water sealant on it. You can get them for food. You get a food Tupperware, you know, that you take a picnic in, right? And you can put the cigars that you're getting in for this wedding in one of those with one of those Bovida packs, okay? One little Bovida pack should do about 10 cigars. The bigger ones do about 25. Given that you're a couple of Zoomers, you're probably going to buy a handful, right? Let's say you buy 5 cigars. One of those Bovida packs and a little Tupperware will keep them safe, okay? Even if you get the ones which are in the tubes, they still need to be kept at a decent humidity. If you let them go dry, they're going to be horrible and they'll be like smoking a piece of wood, okay? So they need to be at correct humidity. If you're really worried about it and you don't want to go into storage or anything of those issues, simply walk into a cigar store the day before the wedding or 2 days before the wedding and buy them then, okay, and then smoke them on the night, and they'll still be with it. They won't have dried out. If you leave it more than a day or so, they need to go into storage, okay? Ornithology Rock says, thoughts on Max Stirner. Thanks, AA. I admire you so much. Well, thank you very much for that. I have not actually read Max Stirner, I'm afraid. So I don't have many thoughts on him. I am not I'm kind of vaguely familiar with his stuff, with him as a writer, like nihilism and stuff like that. But I have not read him directly. I've come across him here or there. You know, I think Evola talks about him somewhere. In Ride the Tiger, I seem to remember. But yeah, I've not read him personally. Indifference 52 on the same video. There were quite a lot of super thanks on this one video from earlier on. He says, thank you. This was a break from everything. Blackpilling. I.e., this was a break from all of the blackpilling things around. It made me realize that I have no quest. Any advice for a Zoomer? Well, the thing is that your quest, it can be like a life thing. It can be a material thing, right? I want to get a good job. I want to get married. I want to, you know, there could be that sort of quest, or it can be spiritual, right? I want to embark on one of these paths and I want to, you know, try to, you know, become more enlightened, something like that. It can be like a physical thing. I want to get a six pack and big muscles, right? It can be, I want to get rich. All of these things could be quests, okay? Or it can be, you know, much smaller. Let's say you're just a lonely guy who spends all day like playing video games and wanking, as an example. It could be like, well, I'm going to make it my mission to make like 2 friends in the next year. Or 6 months, or I'm going to get some hobbies so I've got something in my life, so I've got a reason to get out of bed, right? Or I'm going to join a club and play sports or something, right? It could be any of those things. My advice generally is to make them manageable and achievable. Manageable and achievable and discreet. And that way, you can go on a series of different quests, right? Because once you've done one, you'll get a taste for doing another one and another one and another one. So Stevie Rayner says, why would your goal in life be to be happy? Nobody should want to be happy. That's the very core of the Boomer Truth regime. Materialist and moral superiors live as long as possible and consume. Happiness is the greatest sin of them all. Yes, Stevie Rayner, but if you actually watched the video, I didn't really talk about happy. I talked about strategies basically for making life more manageable. I talk about, you know, there's a different type of happiness, right? Which I guess you'd call eudaimonia or eudaimonistic happiness, which is slightly different from dopamine hit consumer happiness, right? It is you've cultivated good habits and you get a kind of eudaimonistic fulfillment from it. Okay. There are other things that, like, for example, if you're feeling anxious or stressed or life is too much or something like that, then there is a utility in calming down. There are all sorts of exercises you can do to retain control, okay, to bring the different elements of yourself into balance. And really, there's nothing bad about any of those things. Those are good things. There's nothing boomer truthy about what I've just said. You know, those are things that Evola would tell you too. And again, these aren't things you're going to get from pursuing like the material, you know, gain, or they're not things you're going to get from, you know, trying to climb the social ladder or anything like that. These are things that you're just going to find within yourself. Okay. So happiness, you know, I would say there's more than one way to see what it is, right? I'm clearly not talking about stuffing your face with Doritos and watching your favorite Netflix, right? I'm not talking about happiness in that sense. Dopamine hit. I'm talking about finding like a genuine fulfillment in life. I also, in that video, talk about how your quest never actually ends, right? You never actually, or if it does end, you're on to the next one. So it's not about, and I even talk about contentment as a kind of issue, right? You don't ever want to be like, quote unquote, content, because a whole part of being a man really is that you always have something that you're striving towards, whatever that happens to be. Okay, you have to in a way always be the hero on a quest. So, you know, this is a very different sense of what happiness is. I hope that makes sense. All right. I will let us continue. Jacob Lowe says, I have found your conversations with Grok fascinating. I tried talking to it about black crime stats as well. After a while, it conceded all my points and just started begging me not to be racist. Studio Rayner says, would you be surprised if the entire British establishment is advised by a YouTube channel called Academic Asian? Well, the British establishment is not advised by me, I'm afraid, Studio Rayner. Although I am convinced that various people do watch this channel for different reasons, I suppose. I mean, it is obvious when I have affected the discourse. How is it obvious? It is because I have a habit of seeding phrases, of coming up with little coinages and little ways of seeing things that you can use to trace them back to me, okay? And once you know what those are, you'll easily be able to see them. And in other respects, you know, like, I mean, a really obvious one is recently the Lotus Eaters did an entire stream on the Dark Lord, advising, you know, advising Keir Starmer on net zero and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, you can't really watch that video with say, well, where did all these content, like, they just came, clearly a lot of that stuff was directly from me, okay? But there's even more, like, kind of looser ones, which could even be indirect. For example, on the same issue, Peter Hitchens recently wrote an article saying, was you know, I have always maintained that Blair is a Machiavellian, and that Blair is kind of cunning and, you know, versed in the dark arts. Hitchens has always maintained that Blair is just a bit of a fop, kind of a bit thick, basically. And Hitchens wrote an article recently saying, well, maybe I got that wrong. Maybe Blair is an arch strategist after all. Okay, now, whether Peter Hitchens is aware of me or not, I don't know. Whether he has read me or not, I don't know. But clearly, there's something in the discourse that has made Peter Hitchens write that article, right? Okay, so there's a way of there being a kind of butterfly effect, right? It kind of ripples through somehow. You know, unheard writers watch this channel and they write stuff on Blair, you know, there's a way of a rippling through, okay, and it's kind of hard to quantify these things, but this is how the discourse works. Coney says, I too have found political content dull and uninteresting. I'm currently listening to the back catalogue of Man's Hour streams as a replacement. Bring back cigar stream style, messy political content. Well, I've been doing a little bit of that, Coney. I hope you appreciate. Studio Rayner says, AA's weakness is he underestimates the incompetence of the British oligarchy. Hillary Clinton would make a better leader. I mean, I don't think I underestimate their incompetence. I've called out their many, many errors that they've made. However, I maintain that the British system is very, very good at containment. Look at Farage right now. It is obvious that Farage is a containment agent within the system. And it is, I mean, if you picture the British establishment almost like a defense, right, of it, like the British political system as a defense against forces it doesn't want in, okay? You've got, the Green Party as the left wing and, you know, the various defenders there, Tory Party, Labour, Lib Dems, etc. There's a back four, right? But then the sweeper, if you want, is Farage. He is their last line of defense, their last ditch tackle to stop, quote unquote, extremism or quote unquote, the real right or whatever, gaining any purchase. And it's so obvious that that is what Farage is for the British system. Okay. Now, I don't think it's incompetence for that backstop to exist. That's not incompetence, is it? Because it's working. It's actually working. He also says, I also think the UK has invested a lot in Ukraine. When the investment fails, the UK will be in debt again. Why don't you ever mention this? I've done tons of stuff on Ukraine. I've done tons of stuff on the British government being on the hook for Ukraine. I've looked into all of those narratives. I have hundreds of hours of content on Russia and Ukraine. So you just have to go and find it. O2 says, please stop giving Tory HQ advice, AA. Well, the thing is, O2 Tom, is that they're going to watch this anyway, right? And the fact of the matter is that the moves that I'm talking about are obvious. If they're going to occur to me, they're going to occur to Jendrick, right? If they're going to occur to me, they're going to occur to Matt Goodwin, right? Or any of these other people. So these are just obvious moves. The electoral mathematical certainty is that Labour cannot win with a united Reform and Tories, okay? And once Badenoch is out of the way, and once the Tories start chirping in the same kind of register and tone as Reform, they'll say, look, time is running out, guys. We cannot risk the Labour getting in for another term. We must save the country. So, Avengers, assemble. We must unite. If you think that's going to, like, that is going to happen. That is going to happen. Doesn't matter what Matt Goodwin says now. Doesn't matter what Nigel Farage or Jendrick or any of these people say now. At some point, when the timing is right, it will happen. You can put your bottom dollar on it. You can put a bookmark in this stream right now. AA said this on 6th of May 2025. I've said it many times before as well, because it's a logical certainty. It just makes sense for that to happen, because Labour can't win otherwise. And I still go back to, why did Sunak call the election when he did, right? And why did Farage park the tanks in 2019? And why did he bring the tanks in 2024? They know this, right? They all know this. It's their job to study these things. He also says Farage hates his base the most by a long margin. I mean, I don't know if Farage hates his base more than the Tories hate their base. Okay, Farage is bad, but is he that bad? I don't know. It's a close run thing, but I think the Tories hate their base more. I mean, let's not forget, right? Think about the Tory base, and now think about this video again. Think about the lack of respect this shows for the Tory base.
Today is Thursday, the 1st of May. It is polling day. I am out getting out the vote with our Conservative candidates. All
absolute contempt. Absolute contempt. So as bad as Farage is he that bad? I don't know. She Poppergrin says, back from my fishing trip, so what is happening? Absolutely nothing. Studio Raider says, equality for a pagan means something different from equality to a dedicated Christian. Orthodox, not the hideous Catholic Church. Are you a pagan? I mean, I don't know how equality means something different in each of those contexts. I was talking before, right, when it comes to George Orwell was talking about economic equality, right? Economic equality, which is clearly impossible. Political equality is also impossible. And it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or a pagan or an Orthodox or a Catholic. All of those things are still impossible, right? Christians, obviously, they believe in everybody has a soul, right? That God, we're all God's creatures, and that every soul on earth, has a possibility of obtaining entry into heaven in the afterlife. Pagans don't necessarily believe that, depending on which group of pagans you're talking about, because from a Christian perspective, pagan is basically any other religion that predated it itself. So pagan is basically a meaningless term, isn't it? So who knows what pagan means in that context. James Espinoza says, am I a pagan in terms of, do I worship Thor, or do I worship Odin, or the old Druidic gods, or Osiris, or anything like this? No, I'm not a pagan in that sense. No. James Espinoza says Starmer has just agreed to a trade deal with India, where Indians won't have to pay national insurance for the first 3 years they immigrate here. That is terrible news, James. Terrible news. Really, really bad. So that means more Indians. More Indians. Terrible news. O.T. Tom says, I choose Blair over Zia Youssef and Farage every time. I believe Blair is more likely to get things done than Farage, right? But I also believe that, let's say Farage became the Prime Minister, I wouldn't be too surprised to find old Tony rocking up, whispering in his ear too. I mean, let's face it. Tony doesn't need a Labour Prime Minister to influence what's happening. Farage has already praised him numerous times, praised him over COVID, most famously. So, yeah. Studio Rainer says, speaking of tone, by the way, did you see who has been hanging out with Tony Blair recently? Artist on a postcard, ladies and gentlemen. Who has Tony Blair been hanging out with? Three guesses. if you don't follow me on Twitter, this will be funny. But if you do, you'll already know. Let's have a look. Where's old Tony? You have to laugh. Yeah, here he is. Who's been hanging out with Tony Blair? None other than Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. Arnie, I love bringing old friends together. It was fantastic to see my dear friend Tony Blair and introduce him to my brother Danny DeVito. I can't wait to talk about terminating pollution together in Vienna. My God, in my imagination, Tony was like, listen, T-1000 is reforming. And Arnie was like, okay, I have a job to do, Tony. I'll be back. Sue Reina says, attacks on Titans ending sucks. BBC should make anime. Full Spectrum Submission says, AA, thanks. Would you reflect on the Evola-esque themes of cultural survival and modernity in the film My Dinner with Andre? Recommended if new to you. I do not believe I have seen the film My Dinner with Andre. That is the one with that guy, that actor who was everywhere in the 80s. As like a kind of, he always like played a kind of smarmy character, didn't he? You know, it was the same actor who played Inconceivable in Princess Bride, wasn't it? That guy. You know, this guy. It's the same guy, isn't it? Someone. So I've never watched that film though. I've been aware of it for a long time, but Zero X says the Dark Lord doing BBC front page hits on Net Zero. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I should have gone big on that to max out clicks last week, but I'd only recently done a Net Zero thing, so I didn't go big on it. I should have really, shouldn't I? Max out those clicks. Studio Rainer says, I will bet $100,000 that they will fail due to incompetence. If you lose, then you give me a degree in political science. Can't you do that as a PhD? I mean, yeah, I'm not taking that bet, Celia Reina. I mean, I would say that the British system faces significant problems. And speaking of Blair and Net Zero, if Ed Miliband is not removed very, very quickly, then you're probably right. That, you know, that alone has the potential to collapse the entire system, the Net Zero thing. On the other hand, I'm willing to bet that we don't see a collapse of the British establishment, by which I mean the parliamentary democracy system that we've had all our lives, or the monarchy or anything like that in our lifetimes. I would be extremely surprised. There's not going to be a revolution or an overthrow of the government through non-democratic means anytime soon, if I was to bet on that. All right, I think that'll do in terms of super chats. I think that's it. Daniel Hall says jazz, meaningless, nebulous term now. If you just use it generically, was it Dixieland jazz that was pushed? Big band era? Bebop? Free avant-garde? It was the original jazz of writers like Irving Berlin and the Gershwins and people like that, writing songs from New York and then having them performed by typically black singers in clubs up and down the country, and then pushed on actual records and radio and eventually TV. But in that time, radio, live clubs, and actual records as well, actual records that were being sold. that's so really what you'd call these days the Great American Songbook. That is the style of jazz I'm talking about in the early 20th century. That's who was being pushed. Clarice Bodica says, hey, can't stay for the live. We'll watch on catch up. How close is the Dark Lord from getting rid of the net zero crap? Thanks for all you do. Well, it seems like he's ramping up the pressure. He's certainly ramped up the pressure, hasn't he? But as I record this, Ed Miliband still stands. So he still has not gone. He has been attacked every single day in the press, right? But as things stand, he's not here. He's not gone. Now, it's possible that the disastrous local elections are going to cause a reshuffle from Starmer. If Starmer does a reshuffle, the one person everybody's going to be looking at is Ed Miliband. Is he going to stay or is he going to go? Right? I mean, if you type in Ed Miliband, you'll see full spectrum dominance from the Dark Lord. Right? Telegraph, Ed Miliband's team of climate extremists leading us to disaster. All negative. GB News, grab your popcorn. But Miliband's deluded net zero obsession is about to implode, right? City AM, Miliband's net zero plans risk causing blackouts, says Union Bloss. Furious Keir Starmer to sack cabinet minister, who's even worse than Ed Miliband. Cutting the cost of living must come before expensive net zero drives. I mean, it's attack after attack after attack, relentless every single day, right? So I'll be surprised if Miliband survives the next reshuffle, basically. Anything else? Daily reminder that Farage is containment. Yeah, exactly. Sue Rayner says, what about the economic value of immigrants? For example, one Persian is equal to 100 inbred Pakistanis. That's a good economic starting point to consider. Not really, Studio Rayner. I mean, I've addressed this numerous times before. The trouble is mass and scale. The trouble is scaling up, right? You can embed one engineer, my dad, for example, into a town, okay, provided there are no other people from the same background in that town. And then within two or three generations, basically it's trace, isn't it? You know, basically that you've kind of, you know, it's not led to a big demographic impact. Okay. The trouble is if you have another family, two other families, four other families, 10 other families in the same place, then it's a political problem. Because they'll start meeting together, banding together, and eventually politically organizing. This is human nature. All right. And it doesn't matter if it's Iranians, Pakistanis, or any other group, Hong Kongers, Somalis, any group is going to do that given enough scaling up. Okay. So it's never been about the one-off individual. It's always about the group dynamic and the aggregate effect of it all. Okay. All right. That'll do. Is there more super chats? Oh, there are more super chats. Kevin Crow says, have you seen the James Maudsley Holocaust narrative series? Tremendously well done. I have not seen that. I'm afraid, Kevin Crow. I have not seen it. I think that's all of them. Have you noticed that all potential commentators are socialists now? All political commentators, says Studio Rayner. Managerialism has been mistaken as capitalism. Will academics realize that South Korea is modern fascism? I don't want a revolution. Not just South Korea. I would argue that America and Britain have basically been, state-backed capitalism, really. That's been the dominant model since Keynes in the 1930s, arguably. So there we go. All right. Well, just before we get out of here, I'll remind people once again, pick up Trivium or other courses at the Academic Agency. I'll be back tomorrow with Simon Roberts and Horace. My video on jazz and, you know, the top-down nature of culture is tomorrow at 9 a.m. Don't miss that one. There's a lot of hype, that one, on Twitter. So a lot of people will want to see that one. And I will see you all soon.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.